Yeah!
Peter B. Collins, News and Comment, Friday, May 4th, 2012. You gotta fight for the right to party. Adam Yauch, one of the founders of the Beastie Boys, died of cancer today at the age of 47. And the Beastie Boys, I think, were a very important group because as a rock dog who grew up with the music from the 60s and 70s, I was not that friendly with the hip-hop nation. But the Beastie Boys, the first real white act to embrace hip-hop, made it a crossover act that I could really enjoy. And, albums like... License to Ill, which featured Fight for Your Right to Party, really connected with me and with a lot of people much younger than me. And Adam Yauch, who had cancer, was unable to attend the investiture of the Beastie Boys to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last month, and he certainly will be missed. Well, the reporting continues about the trove of documents found in Abbottabad, Pakistan, during the raid that killed Osama bin Laden last May 1st. And I think it's fascinating. On Monday, we'll release an in-depth interview with our friend Gareth Porter, who has become a very frequent contributor to this program. And if you want to catch up on it over the weekend, read his exclusive investigative report at truthout.org and compare it with what you read in the corporate media. The Washington Post and the New York Times both covered the same issue. They looked at the 17 selected items from Abbottabad that had been released by the Obama administration. And I urge people to be very careful because these were items selected from a huge cache of documents and information. And I know Rush Limbaugh is still waiting for the Osama porn to be released so he can get all excited. But what is very different is that the corporate media reports on bin Laden's attempts to kill Petraeus and Obama, which turned out to be fantasies or wishes, but not action plans, and the failure of Osama bin Laden to approve of Anwar al-Awlaki, the American who was allegedly heading al-Qaeda in Yemen and was killed by that unconstitutional and a highly irregular drone strike last September. And they also talk a little bit about some of the infighting in al-Qaeda. But it's Gareth Porter, the independent journalist, who went beyond just a stenography of these documents released with political intentions by the Obama team. And I encourage you to read his piece. We'll go into detail in Monday's podcast. But he has differences about Osama bin Laden's role. He's very clear that Osama was basically retired by his colleagues back around 2003 or 2004 and was a senior figurehead who apparently had no operation role in his final years of exile in Pakistan. And as mentioned, I think these are very important issues and we will cover them in more detail on Monday. Also, I want to draw your attention to the free podcast that is available right now and all weekend long and into the future at peterbcollins.com. It is part two of our exclusive interview with Sybelle Edmonds based on her new book, Classified Woman. And in this second installment, I encourage you to listen to it because there are powerful anecdotes about when she blew the whistle at the FBI, exposing a spy who had infiltrated the translations department where Sybelle was working. And when she, as required, reported this to her superiors, the cover-up was launched immediately. Then she went to Congress, and at first, the staff and Henry Waxman himself at the Government Oversight Committee embraced her and believed her, wrote her flattering letters. And then when they asked her for more information and found out that her incriminating evidence affected not only Republicans, but Democrats in Congress, that's when the Waxman team shut her down. And she also talks about the episode with 60 Minutes and the limited coverage that they offered to the important issues that she had to raise. And if you don't have time to listen to either of the full-length installments of our interviews, and I want to underscore, these are not limited to subscribers. Anybody can listen to these. We wanted to make them available to as wide an audience as possible. But if you can't listen to the entire episodes, please click on the preview clip with the second installment posted here on Friday, May 4th. Because in 7 or 8 minutes, Sybil Edmonds sums up in a very powerful way how she was affected by this ordeal that lasted for years and how it has shaken her faith in our government, in our system of government. And I hope that you will listen and take it to heart. All that is available at peterbcollins.com. Unemployment numbers and jobs numbers were released on Friday, and April was not a good month. The unemployment rate ticked down from 8.1%, I'm sorry, to 8.1% from 8.2%, but the increase in jobs is posted as 115,000, down from 154,000 in March. And I heard one credible source, it's a guy who hosts a business radio show in Atlanta that I happen to be listening to online, and as he picked apart the numbers, he found a whole lot of spinning, and it appears that there was actually a loss, a net loss of jobs in April. So be wary of the figures that are being tossed out here in this election year. Nancy Pelosi, the highest-ranking Democrat in the House of Representatives and a congresswoman from San Francisco, has finally piped up about the Obama administration's crackdown on medical marijuana dispensaries here in California. And as you've heard me rant before, I think that it's a political move, a ploy on the part of the Obama team, because they know they're going to get all the votes they need out of California. And by cracking down on California's legal medical marijuana distributors, they're potentially winning votes in red states that they hope to prevail in this November. And Pelosi spoke up, "I have strong concerns about the recent actions by the federal government that threaten the safe access of medical marijuana to alleviate the suffering of patients in California." And she went on to say, "I have long supported efforts in Congress to advocate federal policies that recognize the scientific evidence and clinical research demonstrating the medical benefits of medicinal marijuana and that respects the wishes of states in providing relief to ill individuals." And I give her credit there. What she's actually referring to is that marijuana is still a Schedule I drug, which means that it can't be studied for its medical value. And that catch-22 at the federal level makes it very difficult to reconcile state and federal laws. And Rolling Stone got an interview with Obama. It was interesting to see how Jimmy Kimmel tweaked the president at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last Saturday night about the crackdown on medical pot here in California. And Obama gives a lengthy explanation here. He says, we're not going to, back, you know, a few years ago, he said, "I specifically said that we were not going to prioritize prosecutions of persons who are using medical marijuana. I never made a commitment," he says, "that somehow we were going to give carte blanche to large-scale producers and operators of marijuana, and the reason is because it's against federal law. I can't nullify congressional law. I can't ask the Justice Department to say, ignore completely a federal law that's on the books." Now, on face value, that sounds sensible. But it's a crock of shit when you consider that this is the man who has told the Justice Department to ignore completely the federal laws about torture, about wiretapping, about state secrets privilege, and who has led the greatest crackdown on whistleblowers of any president in American history. So, I'm sorry, Mr. President, I don't buy what you're selling there. And I'm not smoking what you're slanging. A great op-ed in Friday's New York Times attributed to Alex Marshall, a senior fellow at the Regional Plan Association. Never heard of him before. But he proposes a National Companies Act. This is in part reacting to the news in the Times last Sunday, a detailed report on the tax avoidance practices of Apple Computer, currently sitting on, $100 billion in cash, virtually all untaxed. And what this man, Marshall, proposes is a National Companies Act that, quote, would create a common corporate architecture for all American companies doing business across state lines and internationally. It would establish not only uniform tax policies, but also national standards for the structure of corporate boards, the power of chief executives, the relations of management with workers and shareholders, and the interaction of American companies with other nations. And I would add that we need to put a clause in there that clearly states that if you're an American-based company, you must pay taxes in the United States. And you can't use scams like pretending that when I download a song from iTunes, that the transaction took place in Nevada or in Belgium. So, I'm encouraged by that. Check out that op-ed. On the same editorial pages in the New York Times, a very strong editorial regarding what we discussed in yesterday's news and comment. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals dismissing the lawsuit from Jose Padilla. And I learned an important detail about Padilla's lawsuit against John Yoo, arguing that the torture of Jose Padilla was enabled directly by John Yoo's memos. Padilla sought money damages of $1. Just a dollar. And if you remember from yesterday, John Yoo and his team issued a statement gloating about their legal victory and saying that Mr. Padilla will have to find another hobby to pass the time during the remainder of his 17-year sentence. And as the Times points out, there is no argument that he was tortured. Quote, "This treatment was indisputably cruel, inhumane, and shocking, in breach of the minimum standard required for anyone in American custody, especially a citizen. Some of it was torture." Well, Mr. Padilla should not have had to prove that to show his treatment was unconstitutional. And the Times goes further, calling it a misguided and dangerous ruling that expands the immunity for those who serve in our federal government. They continue, "Until a year ago, the law gave officials so-called qualified immunity to shield them when they performed responsibly in their jobs. In holding them accountable for exercising power irresponsibly, it required simply that a reasonable person would have known about the right he violated. Last May, however, the Supreme Court ruled that existing precedent must put any question about such a right beyond debate." And the Times correctly points out that is an unworkable standard, and this decision shows why. And speaking of torture and kangaroo court actions, Charlie Savage has an interesting piece in the New York Times. It's online on Friday, will be published on Saturday. And it's about the kangaroo courts at Guantanamo. They're trying to spiff up their image and pretend that the process against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the other inmates who are accused of the 9/11 crimes will be fair. And we know from our interview with Colonel Morris Davis, that you may have heard on this podcast last fall, that the fix is in. That when Davis reported to duty at Guantanamo, he talked to his boss and said, "You know, there were some acquittals at Nuremberg." And the boss said, "There will be no acquittals at Guantanamo." And it's interesting, the chief prosecutor now, Mark S. Martins, who is a brigadier general, went to law school a year behind Obama at Harvard, worked with him on the law review. I'm sorry, he was a year ahead, not behind, of Obama. And the president, to his credit, tried to fix the military commission's problem, tried to argue and bring the trials of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his associates to a federal courtroom in New York City where the crimes occurred. But he was blocked by Democrats and Republicans alike and had to eat his words and now is compromised as he seeks to move forward with these trials, which we know are political show trials. This weekend, elections in France and Greece. And they could signal a repudiation of the austerity measures, particularly those imposed on Greece. And it could spell one term only for Nicolas Sarkozy, the current leader in France. And I wouldn't mind seeing him retire early. Never have liked him. And I am fascinated to see what will happen in Greece. These are parliamentary elections. But it is the first step toward replacing the caretaker government led by a banker who's been busy selling off the public assets of Greece and opening up their markets to foreigners as they decimate not only the union and public workforce, but roll back the wages of every citizen in Greece. It's not sustainable, and it's not a realistic way to rescue a troubled economy. So watch carefully for the results from France and Greece over this weekend. And finally today, pressure is building on the leader of the Catholic Church in Ireland, Cardinal Sean Brady, to resign. The BBC broadcast another documentary about his role going back 37 years ago, which he tries to minimize, but he was basically assigned by his boss, the bishop in Dublin, to investigate charges against a pedophile priest. And this is another case where the Catholic Church doesn't live up to its own standards of morality and accountability. And contrast it with the recent attacks from the Vatican on Catholic nuns following the very clear and orchestrated political campaign in the United States to try to force the entire nation to observe the draconian birth control rules of the church that it cannot even enforce on its own members. And couple that with the serious lack of credibility that the entire church hierarchy suffers from. Well, it's really hard to take. And to see these hypocrites who parade around promoting their own version of morality, which is just a patriarchal system of dominance. We need more people, particularly active Catholics, to stand up, speak out, fight back. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to drop by peterbcollins.com and listen to our special interviews with Sybil Edmonds.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.